Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score.
It's the Media Project, and we're glad to have you with us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, welcoming you to this conversation with Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus. I believe that means with merit. He has left from the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, Mr. Rex.
How do, sir, Ira. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. He has merit, but he's still doing the job anyway. So there you go.
Yeah. We got a big award the other night from the Albany Roundtable, and I was joking a little bit, and I said to them,
the round table that it would be at night, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right. Ahead. And I said to them, you know, I get a letter now and then asking me when I'm going to retire, and I always have the same answer: when Bernie retires, I'll retire. Don't you see?
Huh? Really?
Do you think that's
take note of that, folks,
apropos.
And write it in your book? We'll see.
Well, Bernie is going down with guns blazing.
Mm. Well, you know, do you remember the general on the bridge on the River Kwai?
Yes.
And Alec Guinness, who played the guy who built the bridge against his mind. But at the end, he was so in love with the bridge, he was furious when they tried to blow it up. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you see the relationship here?
No.
Well, you see Bernie.
Anyway, we have a letter from Michael in Greenfield, who listened with interest to last week when we talked about the fact that there has been more fact-checking of Donald Trump than perhaps any other candidate that we've seen in modern times, and that on and on, the fact-checkers have found that he's distorting, let's say, the truth somewhat. And I think that at least I was somewhat critical of Jon Stewart for being critical of the media, because Stewart was claiming that we're letting Trump get away with stuff. And I'm saying, what do you mean? We're doing what we can. But Michael in Greenfield, New York, says it's all about how people experience the media. And more often than not, Trump is at the top of the Google news feed. His name is heard with nauseating frequency and so on. So he says, the question isn't that you guys aren't doing it. The question is how you guys can make it louder than the noise and make it matter, because right now it's a mouse squeak in a middle school cafeteria.
Well, you know, that's such a great point that he's making, because I think of all the things that Trump has been accused of doing. We're talking about women. We're talking about being in the, quote, construction business in New York City. We're talking about bankruptcies. Every time you turn around, there's something else. So everything which would have been big for anybody else becomes, as he says, a squeak. Don't you see?
But don't you agree that reporters should be armed with facts that they can throw back at him when he either lies to them, which he often does, or claims that he didn't say something which he did say? I mean, I think that's where the criticism of the press is warranted now. And it doesn't mean that they're being biased. It's just that you're asking hard questions and you're just not letting the answers drift off into the night when you know that he's lying to you.
But, you know, they do it all the time. Megyn Kelly does it all the time. Others do it all the time. They say, no, yes, you did say that. And it doesn't matter. In other words, whoever he's connecting with, and I think Rex made that point just a few seconds ago, whoever he is connecting with doesn't care whether he's inconsistent. They don't care whether he said it and then says he didn't say it. That's what is the enigmatic part of all of
this. Well, at the end of the day, if people want to believe him or like him anyway, even though they've been shown that he's lied, you can't do anything about it. But the media does have a responsibility to throw these things back in his face and see how he replies.
You know, the way Huffington Post is doing it now, for a while they tried just putting him on their entertainment section, and that turned out to be non-viable because he was clearly a successful politician. But now, at the end of every story about Donald Trump, there's a disclaimer from Huffington Post that says Donald Trump is
a liar.
It goes through this list of descriptions of the fact that he's not somebody to be trusted. And so I don't think that I can do that in the Times Union. I can't, after every article about Trump, say the man lies all the time. But the fact is, that makes it very difficult. And I think you're right, Alan, that it's really hard for a reporter. A reporter has to ask those tough questions, but nobody cares when they hear the tough questions.
And the people who hate him care, but the people who are for him. And the question, the only question is, how many people are for him? You know, Rex and Ira, the other day, the New York Times ran a piece about Trump and all the women. I read the piece and I was not happy. First of all, I want to do my own disclaimer. I love the New York Times. I read it four times a day. And they are the best paper in the world, I think. However, they decided this was a getcha piece, and it wasn't executed well. And as a result of it, I read it, and I said, So he asked this lady who was his girlfriend to take her bathing suit off while he was with her. And then she comes back and says, yeah, we were going together here and there, and we were dating. So what is it? I mean, the guy's not a rapist.
I disagree with you on both counts here. First, I don't think it was a gotcha piece. And I think that the execution that you don't like is the fact that it was really balanced. It was fair. They gave Donald Trump all of the opportunities. They had women in there who said, no, he's been fair to me. He puts women at the top of his organization. It right. really was very roundly and well executed in terms of fairness. And because you don't like Donald Trump, I think you didn't like the piece because it had a lot of stuff in his favor.
No, on the contrary, I was called out before saying, if you're going to do it, then do it well. Otherwise, why does it rise to a piece that needs to be in the newspaper? You see, Rex, I disagree with you.
Sorry, I was waiting for the...
Is that breaking news? I mean, I thought that they were attempting to paint a picture of this guy. They had a number of interviews. They gave Trump the opportunity to respond. It didn't draw a conclusion. I sort of think like the article sort of fell flat near the end. But on the other hand, I just think it was trying to paint a picture. And I do think, you know, you recall the first time Obama ran, the press was vilified by the right for not allegedly vetting Obama, that they gave him a free pass. I don't know whether I agree with that, but I do know that what is going on now with Trump is that newspapers and broadcast outlets are trying to dig into Trump's background. They are trying to vet him, and he certainly has a warehouse full of stories that can be written about him, his, let's say, colorful past.
I do not wish to be seen as a pro-Trump person because only the big person up there knows. You see, I wasn't sexist. I didn't say the big guy or knows. But I mean, I am not a happy camper that this guy could be elected president of the United States. But it had all, and I don't want to go around one more time, but it had all the markings of a hit piece to me. And I think if you're going to hit him, you got to hit him hard. They didn't do that. And I don't agree with either of you about your apologies for the New York Times.
What, I mean, what is a hit piece? What do you mean?
A hit piece is,
it has to be a negative story. It has to be one-sided. Is that what you mean? It's not going to do that.
Oh, please, Rex.
Well, what are you talking about?
That is so pompous. It is so condescending. What I'm talking about is everybody knows what the New York Times is. And it really, you said Trump and his women, and you take a look at it and you say, oh, well, this is going to be good. It wasn't. And I don't think it rose to the appropriateness to even have such a story.
Well, that's interesting. So if it's not all negative, then it shouldn't have been on the front page.
No, you know,
suggesting.
You are the world's biggest expert at putting words in my mouth. And you know full well that that is not what I said. And all the thousands and tens of thousands of people who will hear the show will agree with me.
Well,
I think what's interesting in the aftermath of that story is that Trump was able to throw doubt into its content
exactly.
because of the comments made after the story was published by the very first woman who was mentioned in the story. Now, Trump went on to say this proves that the story was inaccurate and dishonest. It didn't prove that at all. The woman never questioned the facts as they were reported in that story. All she claimed was supposedly the New York Times reporters told her it wasn't going to be a hit piece. Well, I don't know whether it was a hit piece or not, but it certainly, whatever it was she said, gave Trump the opportunity for his followers to pounce on it and throw the entire thing down. And he's very good at doing that.
Ira, you're a great former sports reporter, but I think on points, as they say in a fight game, Trump comes out a winner in this one.
He certainly does in among his followers.
On points.
Now, what
I am not a follower of his, and that's my assessment.
Now, you mentioned Megyn Kelly. What did you think of the interview that she had with him the other night?
Well,
it's clear. Did you watch it?
No, but I saw parts of it. And I have to say, it is clear that both of them had something to gain out of this. She works for Fox. The Republicans are going to coalesce. They're going to support Trump. And, you know, it was not a love fest. She asked a couple of questions that were, you know, certainly reminiscent of the old flame. but it was not that kind of an interview.
And it was extremely disappointing. Yeah. I don't know if you agree, Rex, but this is somebody who, her reputation as a journalist was boosted by the questions that she asked of Trump and the way that she had continued to criticize him, rather, all these months thereafter, and then comes on the air with this interview, which was, in the best tradition of Barbara Walters, or the worst tradition of Barbara Walters, just a puff interview. Nothing happened.
Well, it's a little bit unfair to Barbara Walters, who did a lot of difficult and tough interviews.
Right, yeah.
James Warren, whom we often quote in this program, a Chicago Tribune veteran correspondent, wrote this. He says, at minimum, the soft-as-a-grape session on the Fox Broadcast Network climaxed one of the more impressive acts of self and corporate promotion in recent times.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't like the metaphor, because there are really two kinds.
Soft as a grape?
Yeah. There are really two kinds of grapes. There's that wonderful grape which has a, you know, a tartness to it and a thick skin, and you press into it and you eat into it and you feel a pop. You see?
It's like a Nathan's hot dog.
That's right.
Yes.
As opposed to a soft pop,
right,
which is those mealy things that, you know.
So, where else but the Media Project do you get these analyses?
Where would you get this analysis?
But now, here's what was even worse. As pointed out by Eric Wemple, who I believe is with the Washington Post, at the end of the broadcast, Megyn Kelly promoted a book that she is writing that's going to be coming out, and she's touting it, among other things, as telling what really happened between her and Trump in the year since the debate. When is that book coming out? The week after the election.
Great.
So one of two things is accurate. Either she has something that's really great and it should be reported now, book or no book.
Which they do all the time when a book's going to come
out. Or she has nothing and she's promoting this and it's false advertising.
But again, the problem is this is Fox News and it doesn't matter. Megyn Kelly has, I hope, yielded at this point, her integrity, and will never work at any other network. So I guess she's decided that she's cast her lot with Fox News, and we don't have to worry about her going anywhere else where there may be more credibility.
I suspect, only time will tell, but you may be wrong. And the reason I say that, Rex, is that if somebody thinks, some executive at NBC or CBS or any of the others, that this woman will bring viewers and money to their station, they are not going to be that concerned about this.
Well, I think you're probably right. That
yeah,
is what
although
television
the,
news is about.
They did not get particularly good ratings on the Fox network. So if the Fox Broadcast Network couldn't generate ratings with her and him, I'm not sure one of the other networks would take a chance on her.
Now, let me ask you about this one other piece that has to do with this. And I'll read you a quote from someone whom I think we know. Susan Milligan is a senior writer at U.S. News and World Report. She actually was a New York Daily News reporter here in Albany and went off to the Boston Globe and has been a veteran reporter of considerable skill. And here's something interesting that she wrote. What's stunning to me, she says, is how the media is buying into this idea that there's some equality to Bill Clinton having affairs and Trump's incredibly offensive description of women, including his own wives, as though because they both involve women and sexuality, they're basically the same thing. What do you think? Is there too much of the comparison of Trump and Bill Clinton? I mean, Trump has served notice that he's going to be talking a lot about Bill Clinton's sex life.
And in fact, one of the tabs this morning said that Trump had intoned the R word, meaning rape.
Yes, last night as we speak on Hannity, he alleged rape.
So don't bother me with the facts, you know, kind of thing. But I think you can't say it was okay that the president of the United States got down.
Engaged in sexual activity with an intern, okay.
Yeah, I was going to look for something just a little bit more graphic, but, you know, you're not sorry at all. And
I was trying to just preclude you from going too far there. Go ahead. You can't say that it's all right. Yes,
no,
certainly.
You can't say it's all right. So therefore, this argument is they're not equivalent. Yes, they are not equivalent. Nevertheless, you know, why do we get into this thing about what Clinton did was somehow better than what Trump has done? They were both loutish about it.
So you disagree with Susan Milligan. You think that it's okay for these things to be same breath.
There you go again.
Well, do you not? Or do you?
I don't think they're the same thing.
No.
I don't think they're the same thing. That's all.
So what's Trump's strategy? In other words, he is not running against Bill Clinton.
Yes, he is.
Well, okay.
He's going to run against Bill Clinton because there is a segment of America, a disgraceful sexist segment that says, and he's playing to it, it was Hillary's fault that Bill got himself into that thing. And people disgracefully are buying it. And there is nothing more sexist than that.
Is reporting on Donald Trump's personal life fair game?
Yes, of course. Because here's a guy whose finger is going to be on the button. Hmm. And we want to know if he's a nut or not. If he's already talking about meeting with the great leader of North Korea. And,
well, Obama did similar things when he first ran.
Yeah, it depends. Well, and that is why character studies of the people who are going to be in these important positions, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are appropriate. I think I want to ask you guys a question that's been running around in my head lately.
All right.
There are always people who are connected to important news organization people. And the question then is, this was brought up to me recently, do they get firsties in terms of getting the news about them, their friends, their wives, their garden parties, their organizations?
People who are connected? What do you mean, like, connected?
Well, like the wife of a sub-editor or somebody like that who has some influence, and therefore their stories rise to the top. Let me give you an example. At NPR all the time, we see the NPR people getting interviewed when they write a book. They get firsties. My wife here wrote a wonderful book about a group. Your wife has written several interviews. We've interviewed her. We've interviewed my wife. But the question is there a popular perception that the people who are writing the news give favors to the ones that they're connected to?
I'm sure there is that popular perception. I would point out that one of my wife's books, the only negative review she got was, unfortunately, in the Times Union.
Really?
Yeah.
And where is that critic working?
That's right. that's really... The Times Union, if you're just the firstie here, is Rex's newspaper. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, that is interesting. You try to avoid any conflict of interest. My predecessor in this job, Jeff Cohen, was married to a criminal defense lawyer, and sometimes we would be discussing stories for the next day's paper, and he would just say, you got to take it from here. I was the number two editor, the managing editor at the time, and he would get up and leave the room because he would have seen that there was a defendant there whom his wife was defending. So he would walk out rather than be at all engaged in any conversation about it. So.
Well, leave the room, leave the shroom. He was the head guy.
Yeah.
And everybody else in the room said, you know,
We were left to wonder, why'd he leave here? What's going on? I think it was a very ethical thing.
You knew why. But
I take offense at that. I think that we were doing exactly the right thing. And you're poo-pooing it as though, well, he shouldn't have done this. And let's see you do the same sort of thing.
I didn't say that.
So let's have you walk out whenever there's anything that you're personally connected to in decision-making here at WAMC before you say that we're not doing the right thing.
Before you get into your... self-pompous, attitude.
I think it was commendable. No, you're just immediately saying that,
I'm not. I'm simply saying that the guys who are left in the room know what their boss would want. That's what I'm saying.
I think that you're wrong about that. I think there's
more integrity in our operation than you're giving us credit for.
No, we did not.
This is Bernie Sanders redux. You're making the same argument, but this time you're making it on a non-political issue. Just because the boss knows somebody or his wife or kids know somebody, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be coverage for them. It's if it's a legitimate and fair-minded operation. But I want to turn the question
around. Thank God I'm on this program.
Let me turn the question around. If your wife writes a book,
she did.
Should she be penalized by not being on the air?
No.
So if the decision should ultimately be, is the story, whatever it is, newsworthy, and is it worth the airtime? Is it worth the space in the paper? And does that mean that an occasion somebody who we know might get in first? I would say the answer is yes, but not because we're showing favoritism, but because we know about it.
I would like to question you on
yes,
this.
Yes, but am I clear on what I said?
Yes.
Because there may be 50 books worth writing, but maybe we only know about 32 of them.
I raised this issue because I have heard people griping and grousing and saying, oh yeah, they always take care of their own.
Well, they're wrong.
Don't you see? It's not whether they're wrong or right. It is that there is a perception out there, and then I've heard it, which is why I raise it. I have the temerity to raise it on this program called The Media Project.
Two authors have written books, one of whom is a citizen in the city of Albany. The other one is Rex Smith's wife. the one who is the citizen of Albany, has he or she sent a press release to the Times Union saying I've written a book?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure? Maybe not. Don't know about it.
In fact, the worst thing, Ira Fussfeld, that has ever happened was the self-publishing movement.
A lot of papers, including my former paper, would not do stories about
self-publishing. Well, but some of them are worthwhile.
And now, publishing has changed so much that we are doing more stories. There's almost no such distinction anymore. Yeah. Self-publishing.
There'll be no distinction. Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas it used to be that we could very easily say, well, if it's not a mass market publisher, it's probably not a good book. And nowadays, there's a lot of good stuff being produced by tiny publishers or a publishing house created just to market this particular author's work.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We get those all the time.
Yep.
Instead of saying self-published, they now
Well, they need a spokesman like John Miller or John Barron. Did you talk about that? Have you talked about that on this
program? No, we haven't talked about
I'm curious to hear what you think about
that. About the three spokesmen of Mr. Trump. And once again, here's a story that I think his supporters pay no attention to. They don't care that their candidate
imitated somebody else.
Right, imitated and pretended to be somebody supporting Donald Trump when, in fact, it was Donald Trump. And because the media are in such low esteem in this country, the reporting about it, Trump is able to dismiss as, well, they're just after me.
No, and sometimes he said it wasn't.
Yeah, I think the story, I'm less bothered by the fact that he used this phony name when I think most reporters in New York, I mean, you were at Newsday in that era. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it extended to Newsday or if it was only the New York City papers, but apparently he was very well known for calling up the reporters and planting items, and everybody knew it was him, but you wouldn't use his name because he didn't want to use his name, much like you would get a source in the government who didn't want his or her name used. What was the issue with Trump? It's like he can't help himself. He had to say to the Today Show, no, that wasn't me. Well, that was obviously him. He's already admitted in the past that's him, yet his fallback position is to lie that it was him.
But he was a joke at that time. He wasn't a serious person.
He wasn't the presumed candidate.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's sort of, how do you make you that transition?
You move out of one category to another.
You know, Al Franken is such a person. He was a comedian, though he always had a serious underpinning to his comedic work. But here he is, suddenly a U.S. senator, and you don't see him telling jokes anymore. He's not, he tries to avoid being that persona. And maybe that's the same kind of thing.
But if he had said to the Today Show when asked if this was him, yeah, it was me, you know, in the 80s, I used to do this sort of thing. It was fun. Everybody knew it was me. The story would have gone away. Instead, by lying about it, he extended it. And to the extent that people do care about this thing, it was just another black mark under his name.
Well, Calvin Trilling wrote a song that Pete Seeger used to sing, and maybe we can use it at the end of the show, in which he says, when in trouble, simply lie.
did you ever hear Calvin Trilling talk about the chicken who played checkers in Chinatown? It's a very long story, but apparently there was a chicken who learned how to play checkers, and the chicken always won. And they couldn't figure out, and the punchline was, well, he plays all the time. You raised Calvin. That's my one and only Calvin Trilling story.
Terrific. Calvin Trilling, there's a chronicler of life. He is a nonfiction writer. He is a guy who could be considered a journalist, and it's absolutely charming stuff.
He wrote either a short novel or a column about some guy whose sole goal in life was to get a good parking spot in Manhattan.
Well, yeah.
And he particularly needed to get the parking spot outside of Russ and Daughters, appetizing store on Lower East Side. But that's exactly what you said. Very interesting stuff. Great storytelling.
Well, more important is what I was trying to say, which is relevant to this
important
program, which is lie. And that, do we accept lies or do we not?
But
we have to get out of here, because then we can get David Gustina, our wonderful producer, Speedy Gustina, to play a little bit of Calvin Trilling on that.
Oh, that would be great.
When something in my history is found which contradicts the views that I propound, or shows that I perhaps am not the guy I claim to be, here's what I usually do. I lie. I simply, boldly falsify. I look the other fella in the eye and just deny. I lie.
such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.